Greetings, beautiful ones. I am Ms. BJ Martin, and this is Snails with No Shells. Leave that shell at the door. You see, a lot of us are running around here living in our shells. Some of us are putting muscles on our shells. Some of us are putting makeup on our shells. On this platform, leave that shell at the door. Just be free, be comfortable to be who you are in your own skin. Let's be slugs for a little while. Everyone is welcome to this show. There is no judgment on this platform. We keep it clean and we keep it cool. All right. See you later. Greetings, beautiful ones. I am Ms. BJ Martin, and this is Snails with No Shells. Leave that shell at the door. We have no time for egos. Just relax and be comfortable in your own skin. Feel free to be you. All right. So let's get into it. I would like to bring my next guest to the stage. This guy is one of the most laid back guys I have ever seen in my life. All right. Coming to the stage, ladies and gentlemen, I have Prime Harmonic, aka Big Witty.
Thank you. What an intro. I appreciate you.
Thank you for coming on my podcast. I appreciate you. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is Will, also known as Prime Harmonic on social media. All right, so let's get into it. Prime or Will, where are you from?
Washington, D.C., born and raised. Yeah.
Okay, Washington, D.C. Okay, and are you still there now?
Nah, I kind of wish because it's cold. I'm in Rhode Island.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot colder in Rhode Island than D.C.
Okay, so how long have you been in Rhode Island?
I moved here from North Carolina, actually. I ain't gonna be afraid to tell my age, no shell, but I was born in DC in 70 and I moved away from DC in 1996 to go to grad school at North Carolina A&T, and 2001 I started working with the Navy, and I've been here in Rhode Island since 2001.
Oh wow. Yeah. The Navy.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
I'm not in it. Uh-huh. Or I wouldn't be able to have my locks, you know.
Right. All right. 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 None of that. Oh, okay. So I didn't know you were in the Navy. Okay. That's awesome.
Well, again, like I said, I wouldn't call it in it. They call us Navy civilians. I'm a mechanical engineer.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, we just help keep things moving nicely, you know.
Okay. Okay. All right. See, I love talking to you guys. I learned so much. Wow. Okay. So we'll just stick with Rhode Island then. So if I was visiting Rhode Island, where would you tell me to go eat? What's a good place for me to get something to eat?
It depends. Are you like a meat eater? You like veggies?
Yeah, I'm a pescatarian.
Me too.
Yes.
My diet is mostly fruits and vegetables and fish. I don't eat beef and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But there are some good places around here. I just recommended Hemingway's in Providence to somebody. They have a good menu with a lot of variety, meat and fish. And fish is meat, but you know, fish and other meats. Hemingway's. And right down the street from there, there's a new place that's a lot of bunch of places called Plant City, where they do plant-based meals. And closer to where I live not far from the Navy base in Newport, there's a restaurant called Brick Alley Pub that has always been very popular with tourists, but they do have good food. Their chefs and staff are trained at Johnson & Wales, and there's also another restaurant I like down in Newport called Midtown Oyster.
Okay.
And a good old staple of the family, we go to Anthony's Seafood on the Quitnik, you know, if you want your good fish and chips, lobster and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So what about if what would you recommend, like if I had a family, like a bunch of kids and all, what would you recommend I take them?
Are they picky?
No,
well, I say for pizza, like I love pizza. Mm-hmm. But I've been trying to stay dairy free for a while, but there's a place called Fellini's Pizza in on Wicked in East Providence, I think it is. It's not far from downtown Providence. They have like the best New York style pizza I had outside of New York. But as far as sitting down with a bunch of kids, I think Brick Alley is your best bet.
Okay.
Any of the local places that are chains are okay. They're kid friendly. Trying to think of somewhere else. I couldn't get to a lot of kid friendly places because my daughter, when she was growing up, well, she's still growing up. She just turned 9, but she had a lot of food allergies. So there were a lot of places we didn't go, you know, because we couldn't guarantee that they wouldn't have like milk or, you know, certain other things in the food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to get mad at me. I'm going to say something like Chuck E. Cheese's. Red Lobster. I don't know.
That is kid too funny. Okay, so next question. What is Rhode Island known for?
Oh, crap. All right, I'm going to complain a little bit. They're known for complaining. You can't live in New England without learning how to complain. And then the second statement of that is, yeah, I could complain about it, but who listen? Right? You got to learn that if you move up here. It's weird. It's like people be trying to out-complain each other. Like, I had a toothache. Oh, yeah? Well, I had 3 teeth cracked. Oh, yeah?
Wow.
Well, my jawbone cracked, you know? It's like, dang, man. Can't nobody be happy out this joint. But,
Oh, wow.
Let's see. They're supposed to be famous for seafood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I've had better seafood when I've been in other places like Hawaii or out west in Washington State or Oregon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Washington State, you can get like, they name the salmon by the rivers they come from. Like here, you get Atlantic salmon.
That's it.
That's it, right? You know, over there, you got like, they got different colors and names and all that. But Rhode Island's supposed to be famous for seafood. But to me, it seems like they only like lobster and clams and cod. It's like, man, y'all need to put some more fish on the menu, you know?
Right, y'all limited.
Right, it's limited to me. But people like their quahogs and the gooey ducks that people make clam chowder out of. That's out west. But people make clam chowder out of quahogs here, and it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're supposed to be known for their seafood.
Okay, what's a quahog?
Oh, a type of clam, my bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, clam, a type of clam.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Okay, I think about SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah. Who lives in a pineapple? Wait, I can't do that right. Copyright stuff. I can sing that song. I used to sing it to my daughter. She'd be cracking
up. Just hum it. Right. That is too funny. Okay. All right. So what was it like? So we're going to go back to, you said you were born and raised in D.C.
Yeah.
So let's go back to that. What was it like growing up in D.C.? Because I don't think I've ever met anybody that was actually born and raised there. So what was that like?
Chocolate City, baby. That's what they call it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how to describe it other than being immersed in the Black experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that now, okay? But, you know, I remember when I was younger around 14th and W, there used to be like crowds of people, like people would just be hanging out in the street. It'd be like 50 to 100 Black beautiful people just hanging out somewhere, you know, in various places in the city. And, you know, it was a cool vibe. I remember like my mom, you know, in those days you could leave your kids in the car while you went shopping, right? Because people would be looking out for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and everybody was your parent. It was like you can't really do nothing because somebody know your mama or your dad or whoever, and they're going to tell you, or they'll correct you even if your parent ain't there, right? Mm-hmm. So I was raised in a place where I was able to embrace Black culture. But I didn't realize till I got older that it's not the norm everywhere, you know. So in addition to just the family and friends around, just the cultural stuff, like we got like at least four different African schools there, like Watoto, Oserosset, and I know there's a couple more. I think there's one for the Akan, one for the Yoruba, one for Oserosset. And then you got like different groups that were there when I was growing up, like the Nubian Islamic Hebrews, you know, we had the Nation of Islam. I remember seeing Khalid Muhammad at the Kenilworth Mosque. And that was just an amazing feeling. You know, I got to see at my undergrad school, I went to GW, and I was part of the National Society of Black Engineers. We had some talks that we helped organize. So I got to see like Tony Browder, Anthony Browder. I live not far from him. Like I got to sit at his house and, you know, chill with him and before the talk. But like now I don't even know where he live, but
right,
you know, it's like growing up and being able to meet people like that, and them kind of cultivating that sense of Black pride, to me was like the best part of growing up in DC that I really didn't feel like I understood the advantage of until I left DC.
Okay. That's interesting. You got exposed to all of that.
Yeah. And Rock Creek Park, like, you know, some kids, like, they don't really have places they can go. We used to live by the park, and Saturday we ride our bikes down there, go in the creek. We could jump in the creek from where we live, start in Northwest, upper Northwest. At that time, we was off Taylor Street, and we could walk down through Rock Creek, wading basically, and get all the way down to where it empties out into the Potomac in downtown DC. And, you know, walk around where the monuments and stuff are like that, you know. But through Rock Creek Park, the National Zoo is in Rock Creek Park. I mean, this park is huge. It's like half of the city, right? So we used to sit out there and just chill in nature, you know. You remember, you ever heard that song, Doing It in the Park? Doing It.
Of
the Blackbirds. They live down the street from me on Taylor Street. They live like some houses down. But yeah, you know. Rock Creek Park was a big influence because we were in nature every chance we got. In addition to the rough stuff, you know, with Ronnie Reagan in the 80s and all that, and crack and all.
Because you were there. Oh, wow. Wow, and it's definitely different today, especially with kids being outside, because, you know, we was outside all day.
And into the night.
And went to be, you know, get on punishment and couldn't go outside. That was devastating.
Yeah.
Who wanted to stay in the house? Nobody, ever.
Rich, don't know, this was before
Atari and Sega and Coleco. And now it's like, you know, Game Boys. I mean, then it was Game Boys. Now it's like, you know, PlayStation and all that. This was before the video games. You had to go outside. Now I'm telling my age for real. Well, Hood Mystic said, you old. He called me old.
No, he didn't.
I said, that's all right, shoot. Yeah, I'll be old.
That's right. You better hope you get that age. How about that? That is too funny, but that's real. That is real. So what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a pilot. Fly jets. I wanted to be a Marine Corps pilot. First it was Air Force, but then as I went through high school, I was in ROTC, and I started learning about the different services. Now I wanted to be a Marine Corps aviator, and my brother, he was taking classes. So we were at Roosevelt High School. It wasn't the best of places to be in that time. But it wasn't one of the worst either, you know. But my brother was taking these drafting classes, and he was like, what would you do if you couldn't fly? And I said, I don't know, because I'm going to be flying. Mm-hmm. But he would say, you know, I think you'd make a good engineer. So I did pursue my dream of flying, and I actually applied for and got into the Naval Academy, which you would have to do to be a Marine Corps officer, because the Marines are under the Navy. So I got into the Naval Academy, but the chief medical officer called me into his office and was like, because I lied. I said I didn't have asthma after the age of 12, but I did.
Oh.
And they were like, well, son, you know, you can't fly for the Navy. I said, even if I pass all your physical tests, because I could do all the push-ups, pull-ups, and running and all that. Mm-hmm. And he was like, nope, you know, it's just something they don't risk, right? And he was like, but the Navy needs doctors and engineers, right? And they gave me a choice to stay in the academy or leave. And I left. And I went to GW because they had a scholarship for the kids from DC.
Mm-hmm.
And GW is like proper in the city, and they were begging for black people to come to the school. I ain't even going, let me stop talking about them right now. Anyway, so I went to GW because I had an application in there for Navy ROTC in case I ain't get in the academy. And I went up to the registrar, and I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. And I just kept remembering what my brother said. What would you do if you couldn't fly? You should be an engineer. So, and I started taking engineering classes, and that's, and it didn't stop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. So I have, I have a PhD in mechanical engineering, which still surprises me sometimes.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I went to North Carolina A&T for grad school, GW for undergrad. Met this guy in grad school. I didn't intend on getting a PhD, but you know, he offered me a position in his lab. Mm-hmm. I started doing experiments. I was like, "Yo, you can do this." And he was like, "What? Well, show me." And I showed him, and it turned into my project. And where I am now, I went to school yet again. I went to the Naval Postgraduate School and got another master's in engineering acoustics. So mechanical engineering is my thing, and my brother saw it more than I did, and I love it. It's who I am. I can't deny it. But in the beginning, I thought I'm gonna be a pilot.
Right.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, mechanical engineering, I don't think that's too far. You know, that ain't too far from that, from flying. You know.
No, it ain't. I've been blessed to be around a lot of different pieces of equipment in my career. I've actually been on, I don't want to go too much into it, but I have been in a submarine underwater, and I have been on the surface out in the open ocean. And, you know, not too many people can say that they've been on submarines. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's kind of the opposite of flying, but hey, it works.
Yeah. Okay, so I do want to ask you, when did your spiritual journey, like when did your awakening happen? Do you remember?
I gotta
go there.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's important.
So I'm going to say it in a certain way, and I ain't trying to, this ain't ego, right? I feel like I have never been asleep.
Okay.
Ever since I was young, like I was on death's door. Like they told my mama I wasn't going to make it past the first night.
Of being born?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I was so scrawny. Like I remember when I was in high school with my brother, this girl was sitting, I have a twin, we're fraternal twins, we don't look exactly alike, but we look similar. And he was sitting with this girl in the cafeteria, she ain't know we was brothers, and I was walking by, and she said, man, that boy is so skinny, what he gonna do in life? So, you know, I was sickly, I was born with asthma.
Kids are cruel.
Yeah,
are cruel.
But it was funny. That was funny. He's so skinny. What he gonna do? But you know, so I've always kind of not been embodied. Like this is recent for me. Like, I've been working more on it. Mm-hmm. Let's say since I started formally practicing martial arts, which was in the 90s, I've started practicing being more embodied.
Okay.
I would say a sincere wake-up call, right? Like, because I've always had extra, let's call it, sensory perception to a degree. I used to always have vivid dreams of, and they might come true like the next day or the next month or the next year. You know, I used to be able to smell when people were sick. I could hear when people were saying things if they weren't on the up and up. You know, it was like a confusing world to me because I felt and saw and sensed the underlying current of what was, but yet I was in a world where society teaches us to lie about it and be cool with the lie. You know what I mean? So as a kid, I had to bite my tongue a lot, but sometimes I didn't. If you ever meet my mama, she'll tell you I needed to shut up more. But, you know, as a kid, I had to basically shove down and deny what I was sensing and seeing. In 1993, in the summer, I couldn't shove down anymore. I had been through the ringer of George Washington University with all their racist professors and students. Not all of them. I mean, there was some very nice people there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was a heck of a place to be Black and proud at that time. Let's just put it that way. And I'm sure people had it worse than me. You know, I'm just saying it wasn't good for me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I finally finished and got everything done there, I think I was just so sick of it and so tired of school. I had a nervous breakdown like probably 2 months after I finished undergrad. And so I don't want to call that like a spiritual awakening, because like I said, I had been feeling what I sense from the world all my life. But I've also played that game where I will tell you, oh yeah, oh okay, that's the lie you're telling me, sure, I'll believe that. You know, I would play along with people just not to ruffle people's feathers, you know, because I didn't feel like I'm empathic, and I didn't want to feel the angst. I didn't want to feel the hurt. I didn't want to feel the uncomfortableness if I challenged somebody about what they were saying. But it backfired because I ended up holding it all in, right? So after I graduated, a couple months after that, I ended up basically going cray-cray. I had to spend some time in the hospital because I was pretty much a danger to myself and others. And in my world, in my mind, like, I've had to talk to family and friends to kind of piece things together after that episode. But as far as I was concerned, everything was cool and I was flying. You know, I was with spirit, and I was like, screw it, I ain't denying nothing else. But the things that they were saying, I was saying and telling me that I was doing were not what I was experiencing. So I knew I had to kind of chill out and recalibrate where I was spiritually with what,
which was a beast.
You know, imagine telling somebody something and you think you telling them one thing, but they're telling you, you telling them something else. When do you learn to trust yourself after that? You know what I mean? I remember my last haircut was in January of 94. That was probably about 6 months after I got out the mental hospital. And I remembered I put the money for the haircut in the recycling bin, and I put some paper in the barbershop's hand and in the barber's hand. And he's like, he told me later he was going to kick my ass until he saw that money in the recycling bin.
Oh, wow. Like,
yeah, you know, and people were coming up to me telling me I told them stuff, and I never remembered talking to them or that I had helped them out of certain situations, you know. And it was unclear to me. It was all unclear to me. So I had to kind of piece my life back together slowly after that episode to really be embodied. That was, I would say, so in answer to your question, that was the beginning of my embodiment.
Okay. Wow.
Which martial arts helped with which meditation helped with, which I was learning from Osara Set Society. You know, I was practicing Shotokan karate when I was in undergrad at GW. After my breakdown was when I met Pete Jackson, also from DC, but he studied with Amin Santos out in LA. I don't know if you ever saw that movie, Only the Strong. It's a capoeira movie. It's kind of cheesy. You know, people that ain't into capoeira might not have seen it, but you know the guy from Iron Chef, Mark Dukakis, right? Hajime, that guy.
Yes.
Well, he was the number one capoeira student in the class at the time.
Okay.
And he got the role in the movie because he kind of looked the part. Like, Pete was blacker and taller and thinner.
Right.
So, okay. But yeah, Only the Strong. If I don't know if they have it in the disc version, but I remember on the VHS tape, Pete was at the beginning of the movie. They showed him in the shadows, like running up the wall and doing tricks and stuff. But anyway, so Pete moved back to DC because that's where his mom's was from. That's where he's from. And that was around the time that I met him through a friend. And Amin Santos had him study with Nego Gato, who's in DC. So we were learning like both styles, like what they call Hegenau style and traditional style capoeira Angola. And that was like, for me, that art form really helped me to strengthen my legs. Like, you got to have crazy strong legs to do capoeira Angola. And you know, really helped me to solidify being in my body, being embodied and feeling comfortable with moving and expressing myself through body language, which up until then, the only language I really had was what I saw around me, which was violence.
Right.
So capoeira gave me a means outside of that violence, because the whole premise of the art is that you're not supposed to hurt the person you're playing with. You show them where they're open, you have to throw your kicks and stuff with intent so that they can actually learn how to dodge them. But capoeira was born out of the resistance to slavery from the Africans in Brazil. So if you're supposed to be going out to fight for your freedom with somebody tomorrow, you can't be kicking them in the head today. But at the same time, you got to be able to show them where they open fast enough so that they learn how to move and protect themselves, right? So capoeira started giving me that embodiment, a means of expression that at one point, you know, was just very closed for me. So, yeah.
That is so interesting. Wow. Wow. So my mind is blown. I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, so when you went through that, because what I'm noticing by people that have had, you know, yours is like you said, your spiritual embodiment, spiritual awakening. It's like something, and I was talking, you know, Hood about that. It's like always something like something, not devastating,
but tragic.
Something tragic happens to you, you know, and it's
or
like
near death
or tragic or depending on the individual, you know, it could have been it to you. You might be like, oh, that's nothing. But to them, it could be near death to them. You know, it's always something very tragic that kind of shakes you or whatever, you know, to get you on this certain level to get back to you or to, you know, you're kind of like alone. It's like you're in a space where you're alone trying to figure this out. You don't have anybody to help you. Like, this is what's happening, so let me tell you. You don't have that. And so you kind of think, am I really tripping?
Am I crazy?
My mind? You know, what's really going on, you know? So, wow.
For your for your listeners that like to read, for your readers, there's a good book called Entering the Dragon's Gate. It's The Making of a Taoist Wizard, I think is the subtitle, and that's T-A-O-I-S-T. But he went through something similar, and that book is like a good book about that kind of a journey. But every book that I've read, and you could look at Maladoma Patrice Somme, his book of Spirit and Water, or is it of Water and Spirit? I can't remember the title. I think I got it mixed up right now, but I think it's of Water and Spirit. He basically went to European schools. He's African. As a boy, because he didn't have a choice, he was abducted. But he made his way back to his village and became like a high priest, like a shaman for his village. But he had to go through a lot of things like that too. So that's another good book to read, of Water and Spirit by Maladoma Patrice Somme. But people go through that. I'm not saying that it's a prerequisite or requirement. Mm-hmm. And it's not, again, like in Rhode Island, right? Or New England, people be like, yeah, well, mine was worse than yours, right?
Right. You
know, right. I don't think it should ever be like that. It should be a personal experience. It should be so personal that it shuts you up. Like, you shouldn't be going out bragging about it, right? Because right. The strength of the event is not necessarily to scare other people from going on a spiritual path. Right. But the strength of the event is to yoke you from out of the sensual world to get you back into your essential world, your spiritual world. And sometimes, as people who have spiritual gifts, they will venture so far out to do anything to avoid facing it. They've gone a long way, right? So now if you put a rubber band on them to bring them back, it's going to snap because they stretched it out a long way.
That makes so much sense.
So you'll see that it's not that every spiritual person has gone through stuff like that, but a lot of them have, because that's what it took to get them firmly rooted into knowing that their path was spiritual.
And you're right, while you're going through, you're not discussing, well, first of all, you don't even really have anybody to talk to explain what you're dealing with anyway.
No, they're not going to understand it.
Right. So you don't even understand it. You don't understand it. They're not going to understand it. And it's so like tragic or devastating or whatever. You don't even want to talk about it. Mm-mm. It's like, you don't talk about it until I say some years later.
Yep.
When you finally can voice it, and when you finally start meeting other people and, you know.
Mental health. Like, I love hearing you tell, you get up and you say, greetings, beautiful ones. How's your mental health today, right? Because see, the people that are on the fringes of feeling and emotion and sensing the world, that aren't doing it according to the status quo, like they don't wake up in the morning and say, okay, I'm going to McDonald's to get my Egg McMuffin and my coffee and sit down at my desk and do this or go greet these customers, right? You know, they're not thinking like that. They're thinking like, man, why did this person just walk by me like that and didn't say excuse me or good morning or hello, right? You know, they're thinking what's wrong with the world, and they're right, because, I mean, it ain't the world. The earth is beautiful, but the society that people have set up has allowed us to propagate these lies that we're not interconnected. So the people that actually sense that interconnectedness need other people to say, hey, how's your mental health? Like you say, how have you had your water today?
Right. The basics.
Did you eat lunch?
Right. Did you take a break? Did you get some rest? Right. The basics. Right. That we tend to ignore.
Yeah. Yeah. We see people tripping and the first thing people think is security. You know, well, before you call security, maybe ask if that person's all right. Do they need a chair? You know.
Right.
Yeah.
You have no idea what they've dealt with. They might not have eaten in 2 days either. You just never know, you know. So,
and it might be a thin line holding it together. And then you go say something stupid to them.
Right. And they've had it.
Yeah, you gonna find out. It's good to approach people with respect and understanding that they might be going through something, even if they don't look like it. So yeah, I love your podcast. I love your posts because,
Thank you.
I've had different experiences when I was going through my mental health battles, which, you know, still happen to this day. And I meet various people that treat it in different ways. But, you know, I've learned to be stronger because of the people that were in my support system and that helped me. So thank you.
No, oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so look, you said something about books. So, yes. So, tell us about your book.
So, I wrote a book called Breathing and the Body. It's bigger than Inhale, Exhale. And the reason I wanted to write this book is because even though people will tell you day in and day out, breathing is important, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't really understand how important it is or why it is important, because we are not really taught how our anatomy functions. When I was in North Carolina, I was given permission to teach capoeira, but I was teaching beside this guy who taught Aikido Jiu-Jitsu, so we would learn from each other and trade students and stuff. So I learned from him, and at the same time I met this guy, Sunyata Saraswati. Have you ever read Autobiography of a Yogi?
No.
Okay.
I'm writing it down though. Autobiography
of a Yogi. It's by Paramahansa Yogananda. He knew Sunyata's grandmother, who was a yogini. Sunyata is this little black kid from Chicago. He's transitioned, I think it was 2014. But Sunyata, when he was growing up, got sent in his summers to temples in India and China to learn various ways of meditation. He was initiated into Kriya Yoga and learned martial arts from people all around the world. Because his masters knew that he too had to practice embodiment. So he was one of the people I started learning from in North Carolina. He wrote a book called The Jewel and the Lotus, The Tantric Path to Higher Consciousness. Mm-hmm. So Sunyata, when I got to, you know, I started doing workshops with him, and then he opened up his home for a few of us to do, you know, private classes. Like, you know, Dr. Aleem Bay, right? He studied with Sunyata. Oyi.
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah.
You know, Oyi.
If they from North Carolina, North Carolina, and they into that, you know, they probably met Sunyata at some point because he was right there in Greensboro. Mm-hmm. Or right outside of Greensboro, off Sprague Street is where he was living. But anyway, so Sunyata made us buy coloring books that I had never seen before. It was a coloring book of the human brain. And my mind is like, you gotta be freaking kidding me. You know, I ain't studying to be no doctor, but he had us buy coloring books, anatomy coloring books, and we learned anatomy. We didn't just learn, you know, Tai Chi and Kung Fu and yoga. Like he's the one that initiated me into Kriya Yoga. And I learned the Cobra Breath meditation from him. And, you know, we did all types of Kung Fu. And I talk about that in the book, but he made us study anatomy so that we could understand why we were doing what we were doing. So all that to say, a lot of people do not know it. Like we go through gym class, and you might learn how to check for breast cancer or testicular cancer.
Mm-hmm. What STDs look like to stay straight,
you know, but how many people in gym class or, you know, in high school actually learn, okay, where's your blood made, right? Like a lot of people don't know that their bones make blood cells. Like a lot of people think their bones are just hard things. Your bones are hollow with living tissue on the inside. So your veins and arteries, in addition to circulating throughout your whole body, outside of the bones also circulate inside of the bone. And the bone marrow, the soft bit, is, you know, where your blood cells are produced. And then they go through your capillaries and they squeeze and they get all small and, you know, they go through a lot. So every once in a while they have to be broken down and regenerated. And your spleen is the organ that takes care of that, right? So I talk about stuff like that in the book, like where's your blood come from? Because your blood carries your oxygen, right? You can't breathe. I mean, you can breathe all you want, but if your blood ain't working, like, you know, like this pandemic that we're in, it attacks the red blood cells. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if your red blood cells are not working well for you, you're going to feel it because you won't be able to get oxygen to parts of your body, and your brain is going to start shutting down the extremities. It's going to start shutting down stuff until there's no more to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you know, I go through the blood, how it holds oxygen, what it does, you know, once the oxygen gets in your cells, what do your cells do with it to make, you know, the energy that you use. I talk about posture. I have the whole front section is all about the body, the muscles involved in breathing, the diaphragm, the ribs. Like, a lot of people don't breathe and let their ribs expand or let their spine expand and move up and down when they breathe. You know, people breathe like they're frozen. Like, you got to let your body flow. So I talk about that, and then I go into some exercises. I don't want to call them meditation, right? But that is what they are. It's like, but a simple breath work to help you stay embodied in challenging times. The main premise of the book is just that I want people to observe their breathing. Like, you could learn a lot just by observing your breathing. You don't have to control it. Yeah.
Wow, that's dope.
So, I'm sorry. So, in better answer to your question, the first part of the book is about the anatomy and the body, the muscles, you know, everything involved in breathing that I felt to write about, because there's so much more. Mm-hmm. The second part deals with some basic meditations and breathing meditations and techniques, where the whole, you know, keeping your tongue at the roof of your mouth, keeping your nasal passages clean. And then the last part of the book, I talk about, you know, my martial arts history, like some of the stuff we discussed. So, yeah.
Wow. What is the name of the book again? So tell us the name of the book and where we can purchase it and all that good stuff.
It's called Breathing and the Body. And the subtitle is It's Bigger Than Inhale and Exhale. So right now I did it's under my author name, William Martin. It's on Amazon, on Kindle. And you can also do the paperback print on demand. Right now that's where it's available, because I did Amazon publishing. If I make a next chapter or next book, I'll probably, you know, go to an independent publisher so I can have more range with how I get it out. But yeah. So right now it's on Amazon, Breathing and the Body by William Martin. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. And so how can we find you? You want to drop some of your social media handles?
Thank you. I'm on prime.harmonic on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And that's also my Gmail, prime.harmonic@gmail.com. If you email me, put something in the subject line like breathing or Miss BJ Martin's podcast, because if I think it's junk mail, I ain't opening it.
Right.
You know, Instagram, at least you can kind of see who's coming, you know, assuming they ain't spoofing an account. But yeah, so those are the best ways to get in touch with me. And I've talked with very
asthma breathing exercises,
some breathing for energy exercises like the chakra work. I don't do it a lot, but you know, I am open to helping people with their breathing and meditation stuff. So yeah,
that's amazing, you guys. Oh my gosh. Oh wow, I told y'all. He laid back, but he's amazing. Look, that's why he's so laid back. He be breathing right.
I try. Hey, look, I get my challenges every day. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I've been working with Kenji Summers. He's also on Instagram. He does like this, he calls it free peace, right? Free peace meditation, because peace is free, right? Mm-hmm. But Kenji Summers is a good meditation leader. And, you know, I follow a couple of other people. There's the breathing God, and what's the other guy? There's a new guy somebody just hit me to, and I can't remember his name right now. I'm sorry. But, you know, there's so many people out here right now helping people learn to breathe better. And I would say for your listeners, understand that the whole point of breathing better is so that you can feel more comfortable in your body, so that you can feel more comfortable being embodied as you go through this life. So you're not fracturing your spirit. So you're not, you know, splitting yourself. Be here, be whole, right? And that's what the breathing is about. Be here and be whole.
Wow, well, I was going to ask you, was there anything that you would like to say?
Oh, my bad. That was it.
No. Man. You get one more thing. Come on, you get one more thing.
All right, it's going to be weird, but it's the first thing that came to my mind. I'm trying to stick to the no-shell premise, right?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
A lot of people's breathing problems... And I was actually speaking with Keen Kimbitt about this. She's a great artist. A lot of people's breathing problems come from lack of digestion. In Chinese medicine, the lungs and the large intestines are considered as a system. They're dependent on each other. They affect each other, right? And I never really understood this until I got more into the anatomy studies and stuff. So digestion starts with chewing. Like, first you got to chew your food well.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you chew it well, as Montauk Chia says, your stomach is like a bag. Don't fill it all the way up. Fill it about 2/3 full so that it can have room to churn and process the food even more, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then once that food goes through your small intestines, which is why you need water, you know, try and get plenty of fruits and vegetables, because that's where your blood plasma is made, which floats your blood, which carries your oxygen, right? All the water and fruit juice and stuff you drink goes into your blood plasma. So stay hydrated. Anyway, the large intestines is the last part of that, where they squeeze out any remaining liquid. Now, if you didn't chew your food well, or you eating a whole bunch of, you know, crap without like fresh vegetables or fruit and stuff like that, then I told my daughter not to scream out over the air.
It's okay.
Anyway, so if you don't chew well, Malulani baby, I'm on the podcast. If you don't chew your food well and it gets into your intestines and you begin to have these undigested chunks that now your intestines have to deal with, they create mucus. That mucus makes its way to your lungs because that mucus gets mixed in with the juices that your liver processes, which become your blood plasma. So all of the blood that exits your intestines and everything after it picks up the nutrients and stuff goes to your liver, and from there it makes your blood plasma. So if you are having a lot of mucus forming stuff in your diet, that's what's in your blood plasma. So, you know, number one, chew well. Number two, stay hydrated. Number three, eat plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables. If you eat meat, go.
Have a handful. Like I tell people, if you have a handful of meat, have two handfuls of vegetables.
Right. You know, keep it balanced. So yeah, I would say that's my last thing. If I could help people, you know, improve something, chew your food and stay hydrated so that your blood plasma will exercise properly so that you can breathe, you know, with efficiency. Yeah.
Thank you for that. I think that's going to help a lot of people. That's life. Chew your food. That can help with your mental health. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like
people don't think about that. Just chew. Take them 20 chews or however many chews, but it should be liquid or liquidy at least, you know. Don't be swallowing no whole chunks.
Oh wow. Well, thank you so much, Prime Harmonic, aka Will, for joining my podcast. We
thank
really
you,
appreciate
Ms. BJ
you.
Martin. Thank you. I appreciate you too. Thank you.
Yes. And all right. So we're going to wrap this up, ladies and gentlemen. I just want to say thank you for taking the time to listen to my podcast. And if you're not already following me, I am on Instagram. It's MS_BJ Martin. And I have a YouTube channel as well. That's MS BJ Martin. That is my YouTube channel. And before we go, the last words that I would like to say is, remember, just like the sun, you are necessary. I love y'all.